Okay, good evening. We'll start relatively on time at least, so we end close to on time. The month of Adar in our Kolol is sponsored by Eitan, Yosef, Leah, and Oram Melamed in honor of Sophie Melamed. So we appreciate their sponsorship this month. And this week's learning is sponsored anonymously. It's Le'ili Nishmas Esther Bas Shimshon. So the learning we do this week is Le'ili Nishmasa. So last week we began with sort of an introductory shiur regarding Amira La'akam or Amira Nachri. We spoke about the source of Amira La'akam, right? We spoke about the fact that it's not really Del Raisa, not really from the Psukim, but that it does have a little bit of a higher level. It's treated more significantly for two reasons. One is that you do find in the Psukim, I would say a hint, one way to formulate it. Remember we spoke about what the word asmachta means. A hint, a remez to the fact that Amir La'akam is asa, that you can't tell a non-Jew to do a malacha for you. That's because the pasuk says, Kol malacha laye asa. You can't have the malacha be done on your behalf. Rashi quoted from the Mechilta for us that means that a guy can't even do the malacha for you. We said that doesn't really mean it's daraisa, it just means that there's a remez, a hint to the Din Darabanan within the Psukim. Okay, but that makes it more significant, that makes it a little more weighty, a little more serious on its level. Okay, fine. The other thing we spoke about in terms of the source was not so much the pasuk or the Darabanan nature of it, but we spoke about the motivating factors and the mechanisms behind the Isser, right? We spoke about the fact that it's either, Rashi argues with himself in different places in Shas, it's either because of Daber Davar, that you're saying, you're talking about a malacha on Shabbos. When you say, light a fire, dig a hole, you know, whatever other malacha you tell a person to do, sow for me, do borer for me, so you're talking about malacha on Shabbos, that's Daber Davar. You're not allowed to talk about a Davar Usser on Shabbos. That's one possibility. The other possibility that Rashi quotes elsewhere is that it's an issue of shlichus, of agency, that I'm appointing this person, my agent, to go ahead and do malacha for me, to perform a task for me. Now, normally speaking, generally speaking, we don't assume that a guy can be an agent, can be a shliach for you, but we assume l'chumra, we're talking about stringencies here in terms of Hilchos Shabbos, we assume, Rashi tells us, and the Hagos Maimoni and others tell us, that you could have agency, you could have shlichus by a guy on Shabbos. Okay, so that's what we spoke about last week. What we're moving into now, and we're still really in the introductory stage, not in the sense, we're still getting into the halachos, you see on the sheets, you have Shulchan Aruch, you have Gemaras, but we're still in the introductory stage in the following sense. Every case of Amir La'akam that we're going to have to deal with is going to involve two basic questions. Well, it's going to involve a lot of questions, but two first starting questions. One, can I tell a guy to do this? If so, how? Right? The other is, not can I tell the guy to do it, but okay, the guy did it, can I now benefit from that malacha that was done? That's a separate question, right? Meaning it's separate and functions on two different levels. First of all, if I've told the non-Jew to do it, can I now benefit from it? Second of all, let's say I didn't tell the non-Jew to do this. Let's say he just happened to do it. Let's say he did it with me in mind, didn't do it with me in mind, whatever the case might be, can I now benefit from that malacha? So that's a question we're going to have to ask in every case of Amir La'akam, because we're going to have to know at the end of the result, halacha l'maisa, practically speaking, can we actually use whatever was created by this non-Jew? And we're using the word created on purpose, as you'll see soon. So that's what we want to talk about tonight. Once we've built those building blocks, the basics of the foundation of the sugyas from last week and this week put together, then we can start talking about practical cases and see in which cases you may or may not command the non-Jew to do something, request the non-Jew to do something, how you can go about requesting it, and once it's been requested, whether or how you may benefit from it. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about this halacha. If you look in source number one, I'm pretty sure we had this on the source sheet last week. The Mishnah tells us in Maseches Shabbos on Kuf Chaf Beis, Amar Aleph, Nachri Shehidlik Es Haner. Let's say a non-Jew lights a candle for you on Shabbos. Nachri Shehidlik Es Haner. Mishtamish La'or Yisrael. So I misspoke when I said it in English just now. Nachri Shehidlik Es Haner means what? A non-Jew who lit a candle. I added two words wrongly, gratuitously. I said, Nachri Shidlik for you, a ner. That's not true. A Nachri Shidlik as a ner. A guy goes over and lights himself a candle, turns on the lights for himself on Shabbos. Mishtamish la'or Yisrael. So a Jew who's in the room is allowed to utilize that light. There's nothing wrong with that. V'im bishvil Yisrael. But if the non-Jew lit the candle for a Jewish person, then usher. Then you're not allowed to go ahead and utilize the candlelight that the non-Jew lit for you, for the Jew in the room. The Shulchan Aruch qualifies, when he quotes this in Siman Reish Ayin Vav, the Shulchan Aruch qualifies that this is true, even if the Jew hinted to the non-Jew that he should turn on light, or even if the non-Jew did it of his own initiative, which is really what the Mishnah sounds like, right? The Mishnah just says, a non-Jew lit a candle for a Jew. It doesn't say the Jew asked for it. It doesn't say the Jew commanded or requested it. It just says he lit it, and that's already assumed to be problematic, and there's nothing you can really do about that. The post can talk about, you have a little bit of a hint to this in source number two, but you have to look in a few places to put it all together. But what they basically come out with is the following rule. If the malacha done was a malacha daraisa, for example, lighting a candle on Shabbos is a malacha daraisa. It's a biblical iser to light a candle on Shabbos. So if a malacha daraisa, a biblical iser, was done on Shabbos, so then neither this Jew who for whom it was done, nor any other Jew in the vicinity can benefit from that malacha. If, however, the malacha was only a derabanan, a lower level iser, by the non-Jew in the first place, then other Jews can benefit, just not the Jew who was performed for. So there is a distinction between the person for whom it was performed, but only in the case of a derabanan, only in the case of a rabbinic prohibition. If we're talking about lighting a candle, something on a daraisa level, that's going to be problematic regardless of whether it was done directly for this individual or for any Jew at all in the vicinity. Yeah, if you look in source number three, so you have a tshuva from Tzipa Zafrank. Tzipa Zafrank was a Yerushalmi posek. He started in Europe, but he came to Yerushalayim and he served many years on the Beis Din and with the chief rabbi in the area. So he was a important posek in the mostly 20th centuries. So the Rav Tzipa Zafrank has a tshuva here in Har Tzvi Chelek Aleph Siman Kuf Pei Gimel, where he talks about a specific iser in terms of Maisa Shabbos, meaning if a Jew does a malacha on Shabbos, but he compares and contrasts in a way that I think is important and interesting for us to discuss right now, briefly. So we know we're talking about Amir La'akam, which means that if you tell a Jew to do malacha, you're not allowed to tell a Jew to do malacha. Now, what we're talking about on top of that is that not only can't you tell a non-Jew to do malacha, but even if the non-Jew does it of his own volition, or because it was hinted to him, or something like that, you can't now benefit from it, correct? Where else do we have such a halacha that you can't benefit from malacha? Not only when a non-Jew does malacha, but a Jew does malacha. Meaning, if a Jew, let's just make up the worst case possible. Let's say you come home Shabbos morning and somebody who lives in your home is cooking chicken in the oven. And we'll make it the worst case possible. They say, yeah, they're done with this whole Jewish thing. They're making lunch on Shabbos. They're interested in violating Shabbos on purpose. Okay. So now that food is usher to eat. For how long it's usher to eat and for whom it's usher to eat, that's a discussion in its own right in terms of the halachos of Maisa Shabbos. But Maisa Shabbos, meaning a malacha that was done on Shabbos by a Jew, is prohibited to benefit from on Shabbos and maybe for a certain time after Shabbos as well. Good? That's a halacha. There's also a halacha that if a non-Jew does malacha for you, you also cannot benefit from that malacha until sometime after Shabbos. We'll talk about B'li Nedar and Mitzvah Shem soon. Okay, so is there a difference? Are they exactly the same? Are these two halachas very parallel? So if Tzivah Zafrank says they're different. They're different in the following way. You look in the bold, you'll see. Ulam, lo hari geder iser hanami malacha shenasis al yidei Yisrael, kegeder iser shal malacha shenasis al yidei goy. The two, in both cases, the malacha is prohibited to benefit from, but for in different ways. They're qualified as different yisurim. They're looked at differently in halacha. Why? Let's say a Jew cooks chicken on Shabbos, right? He did a malacha on Shabbos for you, b'isser. Kigon mevashel b'Shabbos, cooking. Geder ha'isser hu isser cheftza. Anyone know what that means? Isser cheftza? Right. We spoke about this when we spoke about Hanukkah candles in terms of lighting candles on Shabbos. Basically, you have two types of isserim that exist, or two types of really a lot of things that exist, but we'll talk about isserim here, which is the following. Iser chefza means that you have something in front of you that's an object, like you said, of iser. Meaning, ma'achalos asuros, treif food, is a chefza shel iser. The actual object is aser, right? Let's say, however, you have other examples. We'll move to the Rabbanans just because it's easier. Let's say we spoke about this last week. I forget now. We spoke about this 2 weeks ago or something. We spoke about ever the guy who's learning next to a candle on Shabbos. You can't learn directly next to a candle and use the light because you might come to tip the candle in order to burn it brighter. And that will be an issue of Havara on Shabbos, of lighting candles on Shabbos when you tip the candle. So what's that? That's an Isser Chefza? The candle is treif? The sefer is treif? The table's treif? No. There's no Isser Chefza. There's no object that's forbidden here. What's Usser? It's on me, the Gavra, the person, not to do this. Why? Because it may lead me to do something else. So two types of Isurim exist. Some Isurim mean that the thing in front of you is inherently in its own nature, it involves iser, it is aser, it's a cheftza shel iser, the object itself is forbidden. And in some instances, there's no object which is forbidden, but you can't do something lest you do something else, meaning there's an iser gavra, meaning the person is being forewarned not to do the following, lest it lead to something else. Make sense? Okay. So when it comes to the iser of Maisa Shabbos, meaning if a Jew did a malacha for us on Shabbos, says Rav Tzipa Zafrank, that's an iser cheftza, meaning When a Jew does malacha on Shabbos, on one level, he, the person, violated an isser. On another level, that action has halachic weight. It's a reality. Shabbos is a reality. And when a Jew breaks Shabbos, there's a chalos, a status, which sets in on the object because he broke Shabbos. So he broke Shabbos as a person, and because he broke Shabbos and cooked chicken, this chicken is chicken shell iser Shabbos. This chicken is a chefza shell iser. It's an object which is infused with chilul Shabbos. It becomes an object of chilul Shabbos. And because of that, you can't benefit from it. That's the definition, says Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, of Maisa Shabbos, a Jew does malach on Shabbos. What if a guy does malach on Shabbos? Yeah.
Does that imply that it was a known malacha on his part? Like, what if it's a Jew that does something?
Because he doesn't know. Yeah, so that's when we get into the details of the halachas of Maisa Shabbos, which are quite complex. It's a three-way machlokas tanoim in Maseches Chulin, and Tesvav, that range, as to whether it has to be b'mezid or it could even be b'shogig, meaning he doesn't know it's Shabbos, or he doesn't know that cooking is asar on Shabbos, either one of those two. We assume that even if it's b'shogig, meaning accidental, meaning he doesn't know it's Shabbos, or he doesn't know that it's cooking is asar on Shabbos, we still assume you're not allowed to benefit from it. You're allowed to benefit from it after Shabbos, and there's a question in terms of how long after Shabbos or not how long after Shabbos, which is to be dealt with separately. Yeah.
Quite intangible things. So a Jew does something on music or turns on the lights. Or
when there's no
air conditioning, there's not object, but you're sitting in a room and now it's
right. So that's an excellent question. So we'll talk about that a little bit in terms of Amir L'Akam. In terms of Maisa Shabbos, would you say the air conditioner is comparable to like a light being switched on, or you wouldn't?
No.
You would. So then those things you can qualify as tangible also, no? Meaning a light being on is our Mishnah. Because there's light in the room now, I can see that there's a different reality in the room right now. The air conditioner being on, it was hot in the room, now it's cold in the room. So you can feel differences, right? So there is a creation of something in those cases. You're onto something in terms of there are going to be cases that we're going to be able to identify. That, right, so that's a separate discussion, whether Dorais or Darabanan, but it's still something. There are going to be cases that you're pointing to, which we're going to find, where it's not really a creation of anything, but it's the removal of something else. That's going to be an interesting test case for what you're saying. Dorais or Darabanan matters, like Mrs. Lufglass said, it matters when it comes to Maisa Shabbos. A Jew doing a Malach on Shabbos, we assume the Vilna Gaon says there are a few instances where we could, well, I should say like this, the Vilna Gaon is Mekel on the question we asked before, and he thinks that any time a Malach is done b'shogeg, we really can benefit from it on Shabbos, at least we can. And so we don't rely on that, but in certain instances we can rely on that. For example, if you have no other food and the food was cooked accidentally on Shabbos, that may be permissible. Or, and this is what you were just suggesting, if it's an Isser Derabanan, maybe it's permissible. Or if there's a machlokas about it, maybe it's permissible. But those are, you know, you have to spend a lot of time learning those halachas separately. Yeah.
In the case of the light, though, like if somebody comes in and turns on a light and you're not allowed to benefit from it, what are you supposed to do?
So let's get there. Like, do you have to run out of the room? Right. Yeah, let's get there. Okay, fine. So now we understand. So there's this idea of a Jew violating Shabbos, and a Jew is mitzvah in Shabbos. He's commanded to keep Shabbos. When they break Shabbos, now this item is an item of chilul Shabbos. Okay. What about a non-Jew? Is a non-Jew commanded to keep Shabbos? No. In fact, they're not allowed. Exactly. They're chayav misa to keep Shabbos. So you can't say that when a non-Jew does on Shabbos, really, there's a way to say what I'm about to say. You can't say it, but we're not saying it. We're just saying the word say a lot of times. That's really what we're here for. So you can't really say that a non-Jew is not allowed to violate Shabbos, that there's chilul Shabbos when he does something on Shabbos. You can say that a non-Jew isn't allowed to do malacha for you on Shabbos, but you can't say it was a malacha. It wasn't a malacha. He's not chayav in Shabbos. And just the opposite. He's not allowed to keep Shabbos. So what is it when a non-Jew flips on the lights for me? When a non-Jew lights a candle in our Mishnah and I can't get benefit from it, what kind of isser is that? So Tzvi Pesach Frank says, unlike Chilul Shabbos by a Jew creates a chefza shel iser, an item of isser, the Chilul Shabbos, quote unquote, of a non-Jew doesn't create an item that's usser, but it creates an isser gavra. What does the isser gavra mean? It means that I can't benefit from this item. Not because the item is infused with Chilul Shabbos, so obviously I can't use it, but because there's something wrong with me benefiting from it. What's wrong with me benefiting from it? What would be the issue? It's not machlos, it's not treif. But it's not Maisa Shabbos, because the non-Jew doesn't have any command to keep Shabbos. So he didn't break Shabbos. No Shabbos was broken over this chicken that was cooked by a non-Jew.
It's Maisa for you.
But I didn't do it. I didn't even ask the non-Jew to do it. I walk home. The non-Jew says, hey, I knew you were at shul for longer than usual. I wanted to make you fresh chicken. So I walk in, there's fresh chicken on the table that was cooked just now by a non-Jew. It wasn't cooked through breaking Shabbos, because a non-Jew is not chayav to keep Shabbos. I didn't even tell the person to do it. So what's the issue?
Is it about a creation?
Well, what?
Bishlachim, right?
Is it about a
creation that came to being on Shabbos?
For sure the creation matters, but not in the sense of Nola. Not in the sense of Nola that it was created on Shabbos, but the fact that it was created does matter. But it's the following important machlokas Rishonim. If you look in source number 4, you have a Tosfos in Maseches Beitzah. Tosfos is arguing on Rashi, but it was easier to just put the Rashi in the Tosfos here for you. So Rashi has a very difficult line in the Gemara over here, where the Gemara talks about this case that you can't benefit from a melacha that was done by a non-Jew. The Gemara is talking about Yantif, but we assume on Shabbos as well. And Rashi says, the Gemara says that you're not allowed to utilize, let's say the non-Jew cooked you chicken on Shabbos. You're not allowed to utilize that chicken on Shabbos, and you're not even allowed to use it after Shabbos until the time of Bechdesha Ya'aseh. Or Bechdesha Ye'aseh. I'm not sure grammatically which one's more correct. Bechdesha Ya'aseh means until you will do. Bechdesha Ye'aseh means until it can be done. Either one makes sense in English. I'm not sure what the Gemara in mind. But Bechdesha Ya'aseh, I think, is the way people usually say it. So Bechdesha Ya'aseh, meaning you have to wait until after Shabbos, and you have to wait a little extra time. How long? So if it takes an hour to cook chicken, is that fair? It takes an hour to cook chicken. So then if I benefit from the chicken right after Shabbos, I'm still getting benefit from the fact that it was cooked on Shabbos. Why? Because I had it right after Shabbos. If I wait an hour, now I could have cooked it after Shabbos. I'm not really getting any benefit from the fact that it was cooked on that day. So the Gemara assumes that. So here, Parash Rashi explains, Kidei Shir Likitasan, the amount of time it takes to do the malacha, whatever the malacha might be, Shelo Yehana Mimlechas Yamtiv. So that you shouldn't get any benefit from the fact that malacha was done for you on Yantiv. What's so strange about what Rashi just wrote? This Gemara is talking about a non-Jew doing malacha. Well, what? No, so let's assume Shabbos and Yantiv are the same. There's no malach is yantiv. What malach is yantiv? Where malach is yantiv? A non-Jew cooked this.
What?
The Gemara wasn't. I'm making up the case of cooking. The Gemara was talking about the lakita of plucking, things like that. But let's just say, you know, for our case of Shabbos, you wouldn't say you can't eat the chicken now because the guy did malach on Shabbos. There's no malach. He didn't do malach.
It's done for you. It's
a malach. So that you'll have to say something lumdish. You have to say something fancy. I think I'm pretty sure. I didn't think of this until now, but I'm pretty sure what you just said is in a footnote that I have in something I published years ago. Something along the lines of what you just said. That you have to try to explain that maybe through the non-Jew you did the malacha. Maybe it ties into the shlichus thing from before. It's different in this case because you didn't command it; he did it on your behalf. But whatever, you'll have to say something along those lines. There's a fancier way also to say it. We don't have time to get into it now, but there is. Yeah, we don't have time to answer it now. But Lechora, Tosis is very bothered by this. Rashi, what do you mean? There's no malacha. The guy didn't do malacha. You can't say that. So it does say, no, there's something else entirely going on over here. It's not an Isser Cheftza. There's nothing wrong with the object. There's no malacha done on Shabbos or Yontif. Rather, there's an Isser Gavra. There's an Isser for you to partake of this food. Why? Because what's going to happen? Let's say I come home Shabbos day, and the guy in the house cooked a nice fresh piece of chicken for me, and I eat it up. I enjoy it very much.
You'll ask them to do it again.
Ah, next week, what am I going to do? I'm going to give them the wink. I'm going to ask them to do the same thing again. So what's the issue? Is the food treif, other than bishlakum, which is a good point, is the food treif? Food's not treif. Pile of light was on before Shabbos. The food's not treif. Nothing wrong with that. Was malacha done on Shabbos? No. A non-Jew cooked it for me. There's no malacha done on Shabbos. So there's no chefza shalis. There's no item of Isser over here. That's true, there's no item of Isser, but what you might do is you might get so excited about the fact that they did this for you this week, then next week you'll ask them to repeat that deal and do it again. A gezeira shema yomar lo b'shavua haba, that you're going to come and do it next week and say, please, you know, cook me the chicken, or at least hint him to please cook the chicken. So it's a gezeira on the gavra, on the person, even though the item itself didn't become a malacha, didn't become a chefza shel Isser, didn't become treif through the cooking.
So it's a gezeira on a hashash of
Very good. Good. So the Rashba says the same shot. The Rashba says the same shot as Tosis. And the Rashba asks exactly your question on himself. He says, isn't that what we call, well, I'll give words to your anger, I would say. He says, isn't that a gzera l'gzera? Isn't that a gzera l'gzera? Now the Gemara has this term gzera l'gzera, which means the following. Chazal have the koach, and it's important for them to be able to. It's a koach midaraisa from the Torah of v'asu mishmeres l'mishmarti, which means that the Torah charges Chazal. They charge the Baalei Hamasora are charged with the imperative to guard Hakadosh Baruch Hu's mitzvos, which means that Shabbos is extremely chamer. So Chazal are told, make sure people don't violate Shabbos. Now the Torah says not to violate Shabbos, but if I get too close to violating Shabbos, let's say I learn next to a candle, I might tip the candle. So Chazal, the Rabbanan in the Gemara, are told to make a fence around the Torah. That not only is lighting a candle aser, but even sitting near a candle that's lit is aser, lest you come and turn the candle to make it lit again. So we all believe in Darabanans. We're Orthodox Jews. We believe in Darabanans. So Chazal and the Baalei HaMasora afterwards have an ability to add gezeros. They have an ability to add fences around the Torah. Okay, Ba'asu mishmeres l'mishmarti. The Gemara says, Ba'asu mishmeres l'mishmarti v'lo mishmeres l'mishmeres. Rashi and Beitza, they're not allowed to add double gezeros. This is the beginning of Maseches Beitza. Is a few blots straight, all one discussion, all one shock of Tari. It's a difficult Gemara. It's a lot of, you have to hold cup for a few blots to stay in track there. But somewhere there on Gimel and Beis, that range, the Gemara discusses this issue of Gezer L'Gezer. Rashi has an Arichas, a long paragraph there where he explains what I'm saying, which is that the Gemara has the ability to Asu Mishmeres L'Mishmarti V'lo Mishmeres L'Mishmeres. You can't double up. You can't make double Gezeras. So you can't say, you can't light a fire on Shabbos. Therefore, one gezera, you can't even use a candle on Shabbos next to it because you might tip it. That's a gezera. And then on top of that, you also can't, I don't know, be in the same room with candles. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you can't add on a second gezera on top of the gezera. Ain't no sin gezera, like gezera. So what Mrs. Luftglass is asking, and really now we realize she was just quoting a Rashba that she knew all along, which is amazing. That's in its own right pretty impressive. So the Rashba asks on himself, isn't this a gezera, like gezera? Isn't this double gzera? The whole Amir la'akum is only Darabanan in the first place. It's only rabbinic in the first place. Not telling non-Jews to do malacha for you. Why? We gave the reasons last week. It's only Darabanan in the first place. And now we're being told what? You can't even benefit from the malacha afterwards if it was done. Why? Lest you come to violate Amir la'akum, which is really lest you come to violate Shabbos. So it's a double gzera, no? So the Rashba says, no, it's not a problem. Why? Because the following. That sugya and beitza that I was mentioning before in the early in the Masechta says that gzera l'gzera is only a problem when historically it goes in the following way. Torah says it's usher to do A. Chazal say it's usher to do B, lest you do A. Then later in history, Chazal say, and it's usher to do C, lest you do B, lest you do A. However, let's say the Torah says, don't do A. And Chazal say, and just to make sure you don't do A, don't do B or C. Is that gzera l'gzera? Kula chada gzera, says the Gemara and the Rashba here. It's all one gzera. Meaning the gzera is, don't do any of these things lest you come to violate the daraisa. Okay, so that's what the Rashba says here. We have to. So the Rashba is just allowed to make that up. How does he know historically that's true? So let's think for a second. What was the reason we said last week? This is I think, interesting for you. What was the reason we said last week that, just to rephrase that, the underlying motivation for the Isra of Amir Lahakam? Remember, we said it's either through the mechanism of shlichus or through the mechanism of dabar davar. But what's the reason, the motivation for the Isra of Amir La'akum? We quoted a Stifler going about this.
That you might decide to do your sins.
Basically, right? And the word we used was kal, shalot Shabbos, kal b'neim. Exactly. The Rambam said it. The Rambam said that the whole reason for Amir La'akum is lest you know, like we said with the Chassam Sofer said, that people think that that the Jewish people keep Shabbos by telling non-Jews to do things for them on Shabbos. That's what they think Shabbos is. So that's terrible. Why? Because Shabbos becomes kal. And what's the next step right after that? You do the malacha on your own when it's not so important. So the whole motivation, the whole idea behind the Amir La'akum is really so that we protect Shabbos and make sure people take it seriously. So if that's the case, can you imagine the following? Imagine Chazal said, since we want to make sure people take Shabbos seriously, you can't tell a guy to do malacha for you on Shabbos. But if he happens to do malacha for you, you could benefit from it. Which we know, psychologically, is going to lead to people asking a non-Jew to do it for the next Shabbos. Does that make sense? No, it doesn't make sense. If the motivation is that we want to keep Shabbos serious in our eyes, then it makes sense what the Rashba says, which is that Chazal initially said, you can't do Amir La'akum, and don't even benefit from that Amir La'akum, because that's just the same thing as Amir La'akum. It's going to lead you to eventually violating Shabbos. So if those Gezeras historically came at the same time, and they weren't separated over time, then it's not called a gzera l'gzera, and it makes sense, again, with the stifler, that they would be gozer. They would make such a sakan, two takanas like that in one fell swoop.
But then wouldn't it be, I mean, gzera l'gzera, gzera l'gzera, but same way you would then wink to the Chazal saying, don't do it the next week. The next week after that, you're like, wait, the guy's not here. I'm just
going to
go do it. That's also saying that then I'm going to be,
yeah,
do the same thing.
So that's the problem. Right. It's going to lead to, exactly. So it's two steps removed, or one and a half steps removed, but it's still very reasonable that it would lead a person to do it themselves. So that's the motivation to say it's usher. Yeah, the Mishnah Berurah has a very interesting nafkamina. Source number 5, halacha lemaisa, we're machmir on this, but he has a very interesting nafkamina. Let's say someone, you walk home on Shabbos morning and the non-Jew cooked you chicken. So you can't eat that chicken, correct? Why? So this is what we've learned until now. We've established that it's because we're worried that next week you'll tell them or you'll hint to them that they should make the chicken for you on Shabbos again. Fine. What about your friend comes over, happens to walk over Shabbos afternoon? Can they eat the chicken? Huh?
If he doesn't know to do Shabbos, there's no issue of him coming to do
something. Yeah, good. So let's imagine. So let's imagine he knows just to make it even. Just to make it even. Everyone knows what the deal is here. So if it's an Isser Chetza, because an Anju cooked for you on Shabbos, then no one could eat it. It's like treif. Just because someone made treif for you doesn't mean someone else could eat it, right? It's treif. It's a Chetza Shel Chil Shabbos. That's what Rashi would tell you. But what did Tosa say? It's not a Chetza Shel Isser. What is it? It's an Isser Gavra, meaning the person can't benefit. Why not? Lest they come next Shabbos to command again. So if some third party, unrelated to this non-Jew who cooked it in the first place, comes over and sees a nice fresh piece of chicken, even if they know the guy did it, I don't know, it's, I guess it's too far removed to think they're going to come over to your house next Shabbos and ask your guy to do the chicken cooking. Right, so I assume that that's too far removed. I hear what you're saying in logic. I assume that's too far removed to be an undue stringency to say, lest you find another guy and ask him to. Here, it's the relationship of this Jew and this guy, which we're worried about. That they're going to take more steps to find other guys to do it, they were less worried about. But I definitely hear in logic why you could be machmir on that. I hear that. The Mishnah Berurah thinks this would be an afkamina. Yeah. If you flip a page to page 2, so the Shulchan Aruch and Siman Reish Ayin Vav has like all of the permutations of the cases where we're not allowed to benefit. We are allowed to benefit. So the Shulchan Aruch basically says as follows. Here's the basic rule. You can read along in source number 6. I'll say it in English. The Shulchan Aruch says that a Jew is allowed to benefit from melacha that a non-Jew performed for himself or for other non-Jews. But if the non-Jew did the melacha for himself and a Jew or for a Jew, then you're absolutely not allowed to benefit from it. So for example, if you're in a room on Shabbos, and the non-Jew turns the lights on in the room, and it's mostly Goyim in the room. When's the last time you've been in a room on Shabbos with mostly Goyim? Well, Shabbos, that's kind of a strange time to be with mostly Goyim, but fine. So, you're at a hotel, and someone turns on the lights in the lobby. I don't know. Whatever.
Well, it's like coffee. I don't know. It's always
Right. That's a whole... The coffee is actually a whole nother shir on Shabbos morning, the coffee. It's a very good question. Because they're heating it up for the customers, obviously. Yeah. So, so you're in a room, they turn on the lights, so what do you do? So if it's mostly non-Jews present anyways, then the Jew is allowed to benefit from it because it's not for you. It was done for Goyim, it wasn't done for the Jew. If it's clear that the non-Jew, let's say you're in a room that's full of Goyim, I don't know, you're in the shul, and there's 10 people in the room, 3 Jews, and 7 custodians. So one of the custodians turns on the lights because you're early for davening. So who do you turn on the lights for? It's not because they're making a minion out of the custodians. He turned the lights because he wants the Jews to be able to daven. So there might be other heterim in terms of a shul, but in such a case, you would not be allowed to use it if we didn't have heterim of the shul because it was done for the Jew, and you know that in particular he did it for the Jew. The truth is, you'll even find cases where a non-Jew does a malacha specifically for himself, and still it could be prohibited for a Jew to benefit from it. And the following case is what the Gemara brings. Let's say a non-Jew has an animal, and he wants to feed the animal grass on Shabbos. So he's allowed to cut grass and feed the animal grass on Shabbos. What's the problem? It's not Shabbos for him. No problem at all. So let's say he cuts the grass. How do you measure grass? Not like the way that people on the street here measure grass. I mean, like, how do you measure grass when you cut it? A bundle of grass? Okay, a little Ziploc bag of grass, whatever. So he cuts a bundle of grass, and his cow only eats half of the bundle. So he has half a bundle of grass left. Now, he didn't cut it for you, he cut it for himself. He happened to have leftovers. And he offers it, hey, Jew, you know, if you want to feed your cow the grass, it's fine with me. Can you partake of that grass? Can you let your cow eat the grass? So you would have thought, yes, he did the malacha for himself. So Jews allowed to benefit from a malacha that was done for a non-Jew by a non-Jew. But the Shulchan Aruch tells us here it's a little bit different. Why? Because we're concerned what's going to happen is that this person will next time cut 2 bundles of grass to make sure there's enough for the Jew because he realizes the relationship makes sense. I mean, he's not getting anything out of it, but assuming he's a friend, he'll be marbe b'shiurim, so to speak. He'll have extra grass next time just to make sure he has enough to feed his Jewish friend's cow as well. There are cases, again, this is all building blocks. We're going to have to talk about really practical cases, but we have to know the words and the terms. If the Shulchan Aruch says there's a difference in the following case, let's say a guy lit a candle for himself. So don't you have the same concern? Next time he'll light a candle for the Jew? Why is it different?
Because that line is good for both.
Ah, which the Gemara calls ner le'echad, ner le'meya, which means that the same light that provides light for one person provides light for 100 people. So the fact that you're in a room and a non-Jew lights a light for himself and you now benefit from it is not going to cause him next time to light two lights.
So that's like air conditioning?
Why? If he did it for himself, you're saying. If he didn't, and it covers the whole room.
Yeah,
covers right, that could be. Right. So that's called ner le'echad, ner le'meya. We'll have to come back to that term as we get into more practical cases, but that's important. We don't have so much time left, but I do want to touch on the two exceptions, and then we'll stop there. But there are two major exceptions to the din of benefiting from a malacha of a non-Jew on Shabbos, which are very applicable and need to be spelled out a little bit. We have on the page here source number 7, a Tosfos Masechta Shabbos. Tosfos Masechta Shabbos is important because we saw the Mishnah told us, we saw this last week, the Mishnah told us that if a fire is burning on Shabbos and a non-Jew comes to put it out, you don't tell the non-Jew don't put it out, and you don't tell the non-Jew to put it out. That's the yeshivish way of saying to put it out. Put it out. So you don't do either. What do? You stand back. You let him put it out. You're not allowed to tell him to do so because that's a mir la'akum, but you're allowed to let him do so. Okay, you don't have to stop him. Why? Because you're not commanded to stop a non-Jew from keeping Shabbos, obviously. Okay. So the Shulchan Aruch here says, let's say a guy does extinguish a fire on Shabbos. Let's say Rahman al-Islam, there's a fire in the home and a guy puts out the fire. So he put out the fire. So now, because he put out the fire, my cholent didn't burn. My cholent didn't get burnt up. Or my svarim didn't burn. So can I now use the svarim on Shabbos? Yes. I'm benefiting from a malach of a non-Jew.
No.
If not for the non-Jew putting out the fire, the svarim would have been gone.
But it's something that would have been allowed.
Excellent. So we're all onto the same point, and this is extremely important. Tosfos come up with this chiddush, source number 7, that you all thought was obvious. But, okay, it's not the first time you guys thought you were smarter than Tosfos. So Tosfos here, I mean, Ms. Lofkas literally just attacked Chazal, all of Chazal. Attacking Tosfos is no big deal. So, no, we're good. So here, Tosfos had this amazing chiddush. Listen to this. Tosfos say, this is very different. Why is this different? Because if a non-Jew lights a candle for you, they've created something, like you said originally in the beginning of this year. They've created something. They've made something new in this world. What did they create? Light. What happens when they turn out the lights or they extinguish a fire? What did they create? Nothing. They removed, like you said, it's a non-creation. They removed something. They got rid of something. They removed some impediment to your life, but they didn't create something. The isser of benefiting from mir la'akum only exists when they create something, you can't utilize it. But if they just remove some impediment, you can now live in that metzias, that world, that reality that no longer has that impediment in there anymore. Example, let's say you're in bed at night and the lights are on. So there happens to be more that could happen here, but let's just assume the following case. You're in bed at night and the lights are on and you can't fall asleep, and a non-Jew comes into the room and turns off the light. So are you allowed to sleep in that room now? So on the one hand, you're benefiting from the fact that he did a malacha of turning off the lights. On the other hand,
he didn't create anything.
He didn't create darkness, just took away light. When's the only time darkness was ever created?
Day one.
Makas choshech, maybe. Because that wasn't like a regular type of darkness. I think the Sforno has a lashon like that. It was a darkness that was created like a thicker, more intense darkness. But normally speaking, we don't talk about creating dark. Although we have what? What do we say in davening? How does it go? What is it? I'm playing on the words. Yotzer or vorei choshech. Yotzer or vorei choshech. That's like an interesting thing. Borei choshech. Okay, whatever. These are more Tanakh learning questions. But you don't generally speak about darkness as being created. It's removing light.
But even in that case where he did it for the person, for the Jew?
Even in the case where he did it for the Jew, because it wasn't actually a created Hana.
Can you explain the exception that you said again, that the Isser of Amir al-Akhar is an exception if they're not creating
the isser of benefiting from mir la'akum. That's important, by the way, what you just pointed out, because it doesn't mean I could tell them to do it. But let's say they did it,
right.
I can benefit from something which was removed, not something which was created. Mm-hmm. So I cannot benefit from a light being lit. I can benefit from the fact that a light was extinguished, because that wasn't anything created, it was just removed.
So, but you didn't have a slight
Yeah, in that case, the Jew didn't ask.
You could argue that he just turned it on for himself, turned it off for himself.
Sure. In that case, we wouldn't have to have the discussion. Absolutely correct. In a case where you knew, he walked and he saw you twisting and turning in bed, and he realized, oh, Nebuch, she's trying to sleep, so he turned off the lights for you. It's obvious he did it for you, and he left. You know, something like that.
But also, closing light is not the same halacha.
Excellent. Another excellent point, and that's why I said before, really, there's more heterim here, because it's really an Isser Darabanan, kiboy of a light at best, which means really, really, you could tell an non-Jew to turn off light for you if you can't sleep on Shabbos. So that's, you are absolutely right about that. We're just using, you know, imagine it was a candle, let's say, and it was a real Isser Daraisa, but absolutely you're correct. One other permissible instance of Hana, but we got to go quickly through it, I'm sorry about that, is a case called Tosefes Hana, which basically the Shulchan Aruch quotes in Mordechai. You have it in source number 8 here, I believe. Yeah. Source number 8, you have a Shulchan Aruch quoting a Mordechai, that if a guy lights a candle for a Jew in a room that already has a candle lit, then the Jew is still allowed to benefit from that candle as long as the first candle is still burning. Meaning you're in a room, let's say we're in this room, and it's Shabbos afternoon, and we're learning here, and it's not so bad. My beard hair is on this table. You gotta get worse lights in here, if anything. So it's not so bad, I could read. And then a non-Jew comes in and says, oh, there's one more light that's not on, and he turns it on. So was that a big difference in my life? No, I was reading before. Is it a little more convenient to read? Yeah, any more light is a little more convenient to read. But it's not like a real creation of, I couldn't, and now I can. And because of that, that's going to be the difference. I couldn't, now I can, you're not allowed to benefit from. I could, and now I could still, that's not called a benefit.
Even if it's an item and it's like
added? Even if it's an item like a candle.
Right.
Light is added. It is lighter in the room, but it... I was able to read before. Was I stressing, straining before, and now I'm not straining? Sure, I'm reading more comfortably. But reading is reading. I was able to read before. I'm able to read after. That's not called a real hana.
An example of cooking. You already had food, and they just cooked a little extra and added it in.
Meaning if you already had cooked food?
Yeah.
And they just added, made it more cooked?
If you already had two chickens, you already cooked.
Right, yeah, but those are, then the item is in front of you. You didn't have a third piece of chicken, you only had two pieces of chicken. I'll give you an example, you'll see, it might answer your question as well. It comes to your air conditioning case. But Moshe Feinstein was asked, and I put it on the last source sheet on the last source on the page, source number 10, Igas Moshe Yerdea Chil Gimel. Moshe was asked, in the following case, let's say it's Shabbos afternoon, it's very hot in the house, and you don't have the air conditioner on. So is it mutter l'saper l'hanachri to tell the non-Jew shu cham ma'od v'cheder zeh, it's very hot in here, k'dei she'anachri she'rote v'tovaso, so that the non-Jew, out of the kindness of his heart, will yiftach es mazgan ha'avir. And in case you know what mazgan ha'avir is, Rav Moshe writes it out for you. Air conditioner. Be'atzmo. Okay. So are you allowed to do such a thing? So Rav Moshe says to the guy who asked this, you wanted to make the following argument. You want to argue that it's not really such a hana. It's not really such a hana. Because worst case scenario, what would I do? I'd sweat it out. I could live. I won't die if I stay in the room with the air conditioner off. I'll live it out. I'll live. And so they add the air conditioner, fine, so now it's better to live. But I could have been alive in the room as well. So everybody says, no, that's a ridiculous argument. It makes sense, you think in Svara, but it's a ridiculous argument. Why? Because you could also live without having food cooked for you on Shabbos. But it's not the question of, could I live versus would I die? It's a question of, would I have had what I want or not would I have had what I want? In the case that we discussed before, I have a book in front of me that I could read. Now, it will be even better to read from. But if I had a book that was, blank pages, so I don't have to read the book. And then someone writes the book for me and puts the words on the page. Now I can read the book. No, that's ridiculous. He created a book for you. Yeah, you could stay alive while the air conditioner is off on Shabbos. But you were living in a room that's sweaty and disgusting and boiling hot and stuffy, and now the room is gorgeous and air-conditioned. That's a major difference. So it's not really the definition, is not really the difference between could and could not. It's, did it make a difference in my life? Which blurs the lines a little bit, because now you're going to have to ask questions like, well, is this a big enough difference or not a big enough difference? It's not all or nothing. There's going to be some in-between spaces. They do say a story about Rabbi Moshe Feinstein. They do say a story, they say, I don't know if it's true, but that one time a non-Jew did put on the air conditioner for him on Shabbos in his apartment, and he opened the front door the rest of the Shabbos, that he wouldn't be benefiting from the fact that a non-Jew, I mean, I'm sure it's still cool down the room somewhat, but he wasn't benefiting as much from the malach that was done on his behalf.
What if your air conditioning is on, but you realize that you would want it cooler, but it's on, it's running, then they make it cooler then, and it's on already.
So meaning, is that more similar,
and
right?
They're adding light, so it's on. And
right.
Just,
I hear that.
But it'll stay on longer.
Right, right.
And cool a little bit more.
Right. Again, you can't ask them to do that, but they did it on their own. They walked in and said, it's 68, it should really be 67 in here.
Really,
it would really be better at 67. I hear what you're saying. I'm not ready to pass him without thinking or looking it up, but I do hear what you're saying. That's already the difference between very comfortable versus very, very comfortable, and maybe there's not a big difference. I hear that.
Is there any appreciation for the concept of Oneg Shabbos and if what they're doing?
For sure.
I'm asking, does Oneg Shabbos sometimes trump a zero?
So there is such a thing. We have to talk about this totally separate here, but there's such a thing as Shvus de Shvus b'makom Oneg Shabbos. That's because since Oneg Shabbos is a mitzvah, you're allowed to do a Shvus de Shvus b'makom mitzvah when you want to have a double derabanan, meaning Amir la'akam on a derabanan in a case of a mitzvah. In this case of benefiting from it, it doesn't really it doesn't play in as much, because if it was usher for them to do, if you couldn't ask them to do it, then you can't benefit from it. But if it was a case where it would have been permissible to ask them to do it, then maybe it would pay in. Yeah, but we're not ready for that detail yet. But that is a factor in the future. That's going to be a factor. Oneg Shabbos. Yeah. Okay. Everyone should hopefully have Oneg Shabbos. I hope we didn't take away too much Oneg Shabbos with these halachos. Okay. We're not going to meet next week.